opposition to the Pence tax cut, the findings in the Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey, support for gay marriage, Tony Bennett to Florida, and Dick Lugar says goodbye to the Senate. That plus the call for a mercy rule in high school sports and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 14, 2012.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, the Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey shows opposition to the tax cut plan from Governor-elect Mike Pence. Just 31% support it. 64% would rather see the money go to workforce training for jobs and education. Of course, Mike Pence believes his tax cut proposal would also help the economy. Here's how he sold it during the campaign.
The rate would be reduced by 5% in fiscal year 2014 and 5% in fiscal year 2015. This tax cut will put $500 million directly back into Indiana's economy.
And immediately after the election, he promised to go ahead with his plan.
And the short answer to the question of are we going to seek what we campaigned on is yes.
Behind the initial numbers in the Wish TV Ball State poll is the finding that only the richest Hoosiers support the idea.
They tend to favor it. About half would like to see their taxes cut at that level, 75,000 household income and above.
When it's 2-1 that people would rather invest the money than get the taxes back, 10% back in taxes, I mean, it doesn't give him a lot of room there.
How big a sales job does Mike Pence face? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, have you ever seen that sort of opposition to a tax cut before?
Well, I mean, if you've been around Indiana the last few years, and of course Mike Pence hasn't, but if you've been around, you know that we've cut education funding for both K through 12 and higher education, and people are concerned about that, and they're concerned about job creation, so it's not so surprising. He not only faces opposition among the voters, he faces opposition among the leaders of his own party in the legislature who said that this is ill-advised. So you've got those two combinations there, and you've got the realization that what he's trying to do is to bolster his resume to run for president rather than to govern Indiana, and of course he's going to have opposition.
First of all, there's skepticism from legislative leaders. I haven't seen any outright opposition yet.
No.
But there's not a lot of folks embracing this.
No. The problem is we don't know what the numbers are going to be yet. The revenue forecast comes out next week. There's going to be a lot of attitudes adjusted as soon as they see those numbers. And then you have to wait until the end of the session to get the final revenue forecast.
Right.
Which will take place, what, mid-April, something
correct.
Like that. So nobody's going to decide on a tax cut of any kind until they have that final number in April. But the way this was couched in this particular survey, it was either or. It doesn't have to be either or. It could be both, depending on what
revenue.
Well,
that's Pence's response. Pence
well,
says
it could
he
be.
Doesn't,
it could
he
be
says
both.
He doesn't think it has to
it
be
could
an
be
option.
Both. In fact, there are differing opinions on whether or not they can afford it or not. And yes, the answer is there's a lot of pent-up desire to do other things, to restore more money for education, both K through 12 and for higher ed, more for workforce development, which was mentioned in this question. But at the same time, the idea of putting money back in the pockets of Hoosiers and small businesses, especially because most of the small businesses file their income tax or their taxes with the individual income tax. So we won't know until probably the middle of April as to what's going to happen here, and legislators are going to keep their batter dry until then.
But there are legislators who want to show that they have some input here.
Oh, I think that's a big thing behind this, is that legislators want to tell Mike Pence right off the bat, you know, we're an equal branch of government. And let's recall that when Mitch Daniels came into office, he actually proposed a temporary tax increase, and the legislature...
On people who make more than $100,000.
That's right. And they shot that out of the water immediately. I mean, that was not even considered. And you're saying that they're not opposed to it. Boy, that's a pretty fine line then, because I haven't heard anything positive about it from lawmakers, and they bring up a lot of different reasons. It's not just one simple, we're not sure there's enough money. They have a lot of reasons why they're not for it.
John, this poll finding surprised me, mostly because I didn't think that the folks out around the state were this sophisticated, that they understand state government finances that well.
You know, I think there's a lot of awareness, and I think it goes back to what we talked about during the election with Glenda Ritz's election. I think there's a lot of awareness that education funding has been cut, and then in the last budget, it was not raised again. It was kept at that same lower level. So essentially, the base of education is at where it was 4 years ago. People understand that, and they think, okay, if we've got a $2 billion surplus, $500 million structural surplus, and we have a choice on where to spend that, then we'd rather see it put back into education. I think that's where that sophistication is coming from, and I think that's reflected in what the legislators are saying, and I think that they are going to have to make some choices.
You know, there's a lot of talk about how businesses want consistency more than anything else, and I'm not so sure that isn't the case for people in other, you know, individuals mm-hmm. as well. I'm not sure they constantly want their tax rates adjusted here and there. I think they believe that if you cut their taxes now, you're just going to raise them later, and I don't think they like that.
And Mitch Daniels is about to deliver a rebate on 2013 taxes. That hurts Mike Pence's case here, doesn't it?
It can. Again, this is all about the revenue that's going to come in, and the reason legislators are cautious right now is because the casino and gaming revenue is going down. And you're going to see legislation this session to bolster that as other
more
states around us come online.
Right.
And so you're going to see a lot of that. So, you know, they're cautious right now. And so they're worried about whether or not you can do this. They want to do it, but can you do it and do all the other things that you've got all this pent-up desire for? And there are some legislators who say, including Jeff Espick, who's now advising the governor on this. I called him right after Mike first proposed this in the campaign. I said, you know, is this doable? And I was surprised that I got the answer. He said, yes, we've looked at these numbers, and we can do that and still give education increases.
Yeah, well, we'll see, because it's not only the gaming revenue that's down. Gas tax revenue is down.
They've already cut corporate taxes.
And they've already cut those besides, and now they're giving a rebate. And I think people want to see the money invested in Indiana, and I think that's what the poll reflects.
I just predict right now I think they will do this, but I think they'll phase it in and not do it in the two-cycle period that Mike's talking about.
A longer phase-in. All right. The Wish TV Ball State Hoosier survey also shows a split when it comes to legalizing gay marriage. 45% support the idea, 45% oppose it. Supporters of gay marriage have already launched a public information campaign, but when we showed our poll results to one of their leaders, we got this reaction.
Wow.
The other findings are also eye-catching. Only 38% support the constitutional ban on gay marriage that will appear on the Indiana ballot in 2014 if the legislature approves it in 2013. 54% oppose it.
There are more Republicans who would like to see it in the Constitution, but Democrats and independents are strongly against it.
And when it comes to civil unions, 55% are in support, with 37% opposed.
But we have been saying for a long time the public's way ahead of the legislature on this.
Kurt Smith is an opponent of gay marriage. He heads the Indiana Family Institute and says a poll he commissioned earlier this year shows support for a ban on gay marriage.
But I think that's good public policy, and so do the authors of the amendment. And again, we've had strong votes in both chambers of the legislature, and I'm confident if this goes on the ballot, we'll get a strong vote from Hoosier voters.
Mike McDaniel, should the legislature slow down its effort to ban gay marriage?
Clearly, their attitudes are being changed on these questions. And I don't see them slowing down on this, because at the end of the day, what they're talking about doing is allowing the public to ask the question, to answer the question in a referendum. So I don't see them slowing down. I think it will pass this session, and I think it'll be on the ballot in 2014. There are those who think that you ought to wait until next session to discuss this and shorten the time frame. Shorten the time frame of a campaign.
Yeah.
For strategic reasons, but you're also then passing it in the election year.
Right.
And so there are pros and cons of this thing, but I don't see them slowing down, because at the end of the day, the people of Indiana will get to decide the question once and for all anyway.
Well, the proposed amendment has two sentences in it. One defines marriage as the union of one man and one woman, but the other sentence is designed to ban civil unions. Mm-hmm. Would opponents be smarter to let it go on the ballot in a more objectionable fashion?
You know, you could make the case on that front, and you could run the kind of campaign that Glenda Ritz ran, and you could defeat it. On the other hand, it's also about the image of the state, okay? And when we're trying to attract businesses to Indiana, and you had all the institutions of higher education campaigning against this in the legislature. And, you know, we already have the statutory ban. The idea that you would put social policy in the Constitution is offensive to a lot of people, whether you support them or you don't support gay unions. And, you know, Mike's right. Attitudes on this are evolving. The Supreme Court is going to act. For the legislature to come in and pass this now is irresponsible. And it's going to cost money and time, and it may be irrelevant shortly anyway.
Little doubt, though, that if this goes on the board in the General Assembly, it will pass.
Absolutely.
The ban.
Oh, I think it'll pass by a wide margin in the General Assembly. I think the point made by the person in the story about the legislature being behind—that's
Rick Sutton from Indiana Equality—is
very likely the case, because we've seen that in the polling. I've heard about it from some other polling by private individuals, or I should say, private organizations, that show that very similar numbers. I think you will see a very aggressive campaign against this referendum, if it gets to that, and I don't doubt that it will, and I think that will finally resolve the issue, but it's going to be an awful lot of resources and an awful lot of acrimony in the meantime.
I'm not positive it's going to pass the legislature. A year ago, I would have said absolutely, but I saw Maureen Hayden just had a story about Luke Kinley saying that he opposes it now, opposes the constitutional
amendment.
Putting
it in the Constitution.
That's right, putting it in the Constitution. And I actually think there were quite a few Republicans over the last few years who have been afraid to be in opposition to it. But when you have someone like Luke Kinley, that's right, when you have someone like Luke Kinley coming out against it, I think that really opens the door to other opposition.
And you also see the influence of the Tea Party on the wane helps that regard, too.
One thing that poll
showed... That doesn't show that there's a problem there. That poll, surprised me.
That poll showed...
Showed it even.
But...
On a Tea Party.
On the 2 years ago, 36% of Indiana was undecided on the Tea Party.
Right.
Now, only 4% is undecided, and the 32 that made up their mind all are opposed.
It was absolutely even in that survey.
Yes, it was, but things are going the wrong direction for the Tea Party. All right. Indiana School Superintendent Tony Bennett has a new job. He was named Florida's next education commissioner this week. Yeah. Bennett lost a bid for re-election last month to Democrat Glenda Ritz. He was criticized by the teachers' union for his school reforms, including school grading and teacher evaluations. John Ketzenberger, is that a better job?
Well, for a couple of reasons. One, he won't be unelected because he's appointed. Two, it pays a whole heck of a lot more than it does as in Indiana, his salary here. And three, a lot of the things that he was doing in Indiana flowed originally from Florida. So I think this is a hand-in-glove situation, really.
Who got the better end of the deal here, Glenda Ritz or Tony Bennett?
Oh, well, I mean, I think in the end, Tony Bennett's going to make more money and going to be able to do what he wants, where Glenda Ritz, I'm not so sure how much success she's going to actually have. But the difference between, I think, Indiana and Florida here is that the people in Florida, the folks who hired him, they know what they're getting. I mean,
that's right.
And I'm not so sure that voters, they knew where he was on different issues, but I'm not sure they knew the speed at which things would be implemented.
So what you're saying is he can earn himself some enemies with his style in Florida, just as he did here? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I do think that's the case. And even though he doesn't have to appear on the ballot, he does have an employer now.
That's right.
In a different way.
That's true.
So, the last Hoosier that went down there to serve in the cabinet lasted about a month?
Yeah,
so you've got that issue. He probably ought to learn to leave the whistle behind and maybe take that Dale Carnegie course about how to make friends and influence people before he starts down there.
No surprise that he got this job, though.
No, John had it right. This is a hand-in-glove situation for him, because most of the the reforms that he passed here had already been passed under Governor Jeb Bush. And so, and because it is an appointed position, he can go and implement all of those things that they've done and not have to worry about passing it all like he did here in such a short period of time.
All right, it's the end of an era. After 36 years serving in the U.S. Senate, Indiana Republican Richard Lugar made his farewell speech on the floor of the Senate this week and gave a little lecture on the way out.
I hesitate to describe our current state as the most partisan ever, but I do believe that as an institution, we have not lived up to the expectations of our constituents to make excellence in governance our top priority.
Meantime, Leslie Weidenbender, the Republican who defeated Lugar in the May primary, Richard Murdoch, blamed the liberal media this week for his defeat in a fundraising email. Was the liberal media responsible?
No, but it's a good way to raise money among hardcore Republicans. Yep. There's no doubt about that. There is no message, I think, that plays better in that group than blaming the liberal media for things. But I think it's fair to say that Richard Murdoch lost because of the campaign Richard Murdoch ran.
Well, it was because the media relayed what he said, right?
Yeah, his biggest
that's
problem.
Unfair. That is unfair.
You know, I thought his biggest problem was they got quoted accurately.
Especially in that one little line in the debate. I mean,
it was more than that, though. I mean, that was the final nail in the coffin for him. But when you add up the other things that he said immediately after the primary that kept being played over and over and over again right after the primary.
Right.
I mean, that just laid that foundation. Then when he made the final statement, it was like, you got to be kidding.
When you have a campaign debt like they've got that they need to fill, this is the
over
perfect strategy.
Over 200,000 of it came from him.
That's right. This is the perfect strategy for that. But I think it's notable that the Indianapolis Star this morning took him to the woodshed and absolutely just beat him senseless with the poor campaign and the poor excuse, and they're sick of it. I think everybody ought to be sick of that kind of thing.
You still read the Star?
Wow. Thank you, Jim.
The editorial cartoons.
So do I. but, I mean, he blamed the voters on election night, the media now. He's blamed everybody but himself.
Yeah, you ought to look in the mirror. I mean, he really ought to look in the mirror. He ran an absolutely abominable campaign, and his attacks on Lugar were beyond the pale. And, you know, it's obviously Richard Lugar's closing this chapter in his life. I think he'll be very active and contribute a lot more in subsequent chapters because the book isn't finished yet, I don't think, on his accomplishments.
So how about Lugar's remarks there in the Senate? Are those lost on the folks there?
Oh, it is so partisan there. You know, I don't know whether it's lost or not. I mean, I think they're going to have to deal with the filibuster question. I think they're going to have to do something with that, and then they're going to have to, as long as McConnell's there, I don't see them working together. I think Boehner's actually trying to bring his caucus in line and get something done.
And in the meantime, he may earn an opponent in the race for Speaker.
Well, there's that, and that's the problem with the gerrymandering. The threat to the Republicans in Congress come all the way from their primaries. They don't come from the general elections, by and large, and that's a problem.
Lugar's managing to go out as a statesman.
Well, it's always has been.
Yeah,
this isn't anything new. I mean, he has been all throughout his career. And I think his speech, I was kind of surprised a little bit that he had kind of gave a little lecture to his colleagues there on the way out. But look, he's been a great leader for this country and this world for a long, long time. And he's sorely going to be missed.
You know what's interesting, though, is I was at the announcement at the University of Indianapolis where they explained the new program they're going to be having, what he's going to help with. And it was really interesting. He seems very excited about what he's got going next.
Yeah.
He does not seem like a guy who was defeated. Yeah. He seems like a guy who's ready for the next chapter.
And he has other chapters. I think he's got an association with IU at the Center for Congress, and he's talking
to
Marion
Georgetown.
College, and he's talking to Georgetown. Mm-hmm. I mean,
he's having a good time.
One job for three
well,
or four.
He's going to have a good time, and it's going to be good for the rest of us because his voice should be heard in the din.
Mm-hmm. A wild final score from a girls' high school basketball game this week prompted outrage. Bloomington South High School defeated Arlington 107-2. This is a picture of the scoreboard posted on Twitter. People around the country have been tweeting about it since. Some say the score is outrageous and that Bloomington South should have backed off. Others say fair is fair. If no rules are broken, Mike McDaniel, what do you say?
I find it to be outrageous. I just the idea of running up a score like that is just beyond the pale. I mean, you can call off the dogs and teach them to hold the ball.
There are things you can teach other than scoring.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. And I'm told, I don't know this for sure, but I'm told they were even pressing
the other team into the second half.
I mean, come on. I mean, that's just outrageous. You know, I think there should be some kind of a mercy rule here because it's embarrassing to the girls that were playing in that game, and it's just not very sportsmanlike at all.
Should there be sanctions against the winning coaches?
Yeah, actually, I think that the school board ought to step in here and say, you know, part of what we pay you for is coaching, but part of what we pay you for is the adult supervision here, and this is not adult-like conduct. And I don't think you need a written rule on this. You just need some common sense. That's all you need.
That's the problem, man, though, is that competition for the sake of competition is giving way to competition for the sole purpose of winning. And that's what was going on, and that's the unfortunate thing, especially at the high school level, where it should be about the competition. There's nothing wrong with having a good competition, conducting it the right way. And, you know, somebody's going to win, somebody's going to lose, but there ought to be grace in this whole thing.
Well, that's why Bloomington South could take some action.
Are you saying there's too much competition?
No, I'm saying that there's a win-at-all-cost notion here, and to drive up the score like that is part of that problem.
Do you think anyone will do anything?
I'm not sure. You know, I would be lying if I pretended to know exactly what happened here, exactly what actions were taken by the coach.
I mean, part of it, part of it is because Arlington is a takeover school.
There
and
are a lot
lost
of issues
a lot of
here.
Students.
Absolutely.
It probably should be a 2A or a 1A,
The problem was in the schedule, is partly in the scheduling. But I also think that you have to be a little bit careful about what is embarrassing and what isn't embarrassing, and having one team essentially just give up and no longer play the game, I'm not sure is any less embarrassing to the team getting beat. I mean, yeah. you got to be a little bit sensitive and careful here. I mean,
you do, which is why you probably don't have a rule. But it's kind of like the Supreme Court definition of pornography. You know it when you see it.
I actually think a rule is in some ways helpful.
A mercy rule.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
I
run
do
the clock.
They have it in softball.
They actually do. They have it in other sports
yes.
in the IHSAA. They just don't have it in basketball or football.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should the IHSAA have a mercy rule? Your choices are A, yes, and B, no. Last week's question was, is an outdoor inaugural a good idea? 18% said yes, 35% said no, 47% said if there is a plan B. To take part in the poll, just go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Finally, to some, it's just a set of numbers on the calendar, 12, 12, 12. But for a Bedford couple, it was also their 12th wedding anniversary. Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman officiated this week as Ray and Debbie Lindsay renewed their vows. The ceremony took place in the Lieutenant Governor's office at the State House, and the Christmas tree arrived hours before the ceremony. The staff spent the morning decorating.
I had some bad choices in my life, and doctor told me if I didn't stop what I was doing, I was going to die.
We've both been through some rough times, but he's always pulled me back up. And we made it through together.
And Delaney, how about that? A love story on Indiana Weekend Review.
Jim, I got to tell you, it's pretty much out of character for you. You know, if there were a wake on there and you were telling a joke, it would be much more in character. But it's a nice story. Am I wrong, Michael?
No, there are marriages in the State House all the time, and this was really a nice service. I think it's neat they did that.
No, we mean the cello. It's completely out of character.
Pick on me. Yeah. We don't have to pick on me.
Why not? It's
Mr.
Fun.
Love story.
Tell me this. What's Becky Skillman going to do?
What's she going to do? Well, she's still heading the Bicentennial Commission. We have a Bicentennial coming up in 2016. And she's still a Republican National Committee woman, so she's active in the National Party. And I think she's going to have other opportunities also ahead of her in the business community.
Okay. This whole 12-12-12 business.
I don't know. My big question is Mike Pence going to keep the Bicentennial Commission in place?
Because
there was a Bicentennial group under Frank O'Bannon that somehow just disappeared. once the new governor took
over. Started over. It became something that became
new. Whole new program.
Will we be here for Indiana Week in Review next week, since 12-12-12 is awaited 12-21?
And the end of the Mayan calendar is 12-21.
Yeah, right. So will we be here next week?
No.
Will there be an audience?
I'm not surprised you did a 12-12-12 story. Isn't 12-12-12 a fertilizer?
Oh, my God. That's Indiana Week in Review.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.